to shoot the defence. It's unbelievable, Jeff.
Hello and welcome to another edition of Shoot the Defence, brought to you by the FNX Network, My Sportswear and the Offside Trust. I'm your host, Stel. This is Yanakis. I'm not going to introduce him because he's been winding me up all night. We've got three special guests this evening. Number one, Rodri Giggs. How are you doing, Rod? You cool?
Yeah, I'm good. You okay, fellas? Yeah?
Not bad, mate.
We're fine. Cheers, mate. Thank you. Who shall I pick for next? Okay, let's go for number two, door number two. Mark Meredith, all the way from Texas and representing Liverpool International Academy. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right, Stel. It's good to be back talking to you guys. It's been a few months now since I've been on the show, so it's nice to come back and get involved. So thanks for having me on.
That's great to have you back, Mark. It's always a pleasure, mate. And door number three is Luton Town fan, making his debut on Shoot the Defence. He's one of the original listeners to the show. It's an absolute honour to have you on the show, Mr. Ben Burnett. How are you doing, buddy?
It's a pleasure, my friend. Thank you for having me on.
About bloody time as well.
Now, thanks, Roger. I really appreciate it. Big fan of the show, so I'm looking forward to this.
Pleasure having you on, buddy. Pleasure having you on. Right, gentlemen, let's start with, well, the FA Cup semi-final. And the final is going to be an all-London affair after Chelsea and Arsenal were victorious over Spurs and Man City, respectively. Now, let's discuss the semi-final where Chelsea's 4-2 win over Spurs wasn't as comfortable as the scoreline suggests. Now, Mark, I know Antonio Conte made a couple of surprise omissions from his starting lineup, replacing Hazard and Costa with Willian and Batshuayi, who's absolutely pony. Willian scored twice, one being an exceptional free kick. But while the gamble paid off, why do you think Conte made such a brave change?
It's a difficult one, Stan. I think when you look at a squad like Chelsea have, you know, Willian could probably get into quite a lot of the Premier League teams anyway, you know, without argument. So to do a little bit of a squad rotation with what he has still to play for in the league, I think he went for it. You know, the league's more important, I think, to him than the FA Cup. But like you say, Willian come in, got two good goals and everything paid off from there.
So you don't think it was a rotation thing then?
He could call it a rotation, but I think, like I say, looking at their squad, you could pick two different 11s for me, you know, as the coach. So he's quite lucky going in there and having lots and lots of talent to work with. So, you know, I feel that any of the two teams he picks could go out and win each and every game, really.
Scary, isn't it? It was back in the day when Mourinho had two squads at Chelsea. You always used to think they could win every bad game with their two squads, yeah. Well, look, Pochettino, he's a mate of yours, not literally a mate of yours, but you're a big fan. He raised a few eyebrows with his selections out wide, going with Trippier and Son over Walker and Ben Davis. I mean, I can understand Trippier over Walker because they're very similar players, but Son wide left, it absolutely baffled me. I mean, I can only think Pochettino wanted him, you know, because he's energetic and he's quick enough to I don't know, contain or even track Moses, I'd say shocking error of judgment. What do you reckon?
In hindsight, yeah, after, you know, his performance on Saturday, I can see why he played him on the left, maybe to try and push Azpilicueta and Moses further back so that they didn't get forward, especially Moses. But he kind of backfired when Moses pushed Son all the way back, eventually brought him down for the penalty as well. I thought it was more disappointing attacking-wise, more than defensively. Defensively, you can understand. He's not a defensive player, so he's going to be suspect defensively. But he didn't offer a lot. He gave the ball away too many times. He didn't beat Moses, either on the inside or the outside. Didn't put any crosses in. They looked unbalanced on the left-hand side. I personally would have gone for Davis on the left-hand side. He's got natural left foot. He's going to give you that width. It did backfire.
Mm-hmm. Well, Ben, when Ali levelled it up again, did you think Spurs were going to win the game, mate?
Not at all, to be honest with you. I think Chelsea were the better team of the day. I think Barb, Kane, Ali and Eriksen, I think Chelsea were by far the better team. I think the scoreline was a lot harsher than the game went, but I do think Chelsea were the better team of the day. So, no, I didn't think they were going to come back at all, get the winner. But it was a very good game. I enjoyed the game, but I think Chelsea were the better team of the day.
Mm. And the game seemed to change when Hazard came on. And Rodri, his goal was absolutely superb, wasn't it? I mean, where was the defending now? I mean, he's on the edge of the box. It's persistent mistakes with Spurs that makes you believe that they'll always be nearly men.
Possibly, but you know, it's they've made a change. Obviously, the right information has not been gone on about who's picking her up, and that's I'm assuming, because why would you leave such a player like Hazard alone? There's so much space on the edge of the area, and he punished him. So it's mistakes, yeah, but they have to learn from him and learn from him quick. It's the second year now if they don't win the league. Although it was a cup game, you know, if they're still making these mistakes in the league, then it's going to cost them, and they won't win anything if they keep on making these silly mistakes. They have to learn from them.
Mm. Well, Rod, where do you think they need to improve then? Because week in, week out, we talk about Spurs' title credentials. But I'm looking at that squad, I'm thinking, apart from Lloris, Vertonghen, and maybe, I don't know, Dembele, they haven't got any senior figures there. Do you think that's what they're lacking, that experience head that can calm the situation down?
Possibly, yeah. Like I say, they haven't got a so-called leader there, but they're all a young squad. Possibly. It's, you know, they've got to learn quick, and they only learn by experience. They've learned from last year, obviously, because they look like a better team today. I disagree with Ben. I thought Tottenham were by far the better team. They just didn't take the chances. And, you know, Chelsea defended well and did a job on Tottenham, but Tottenham take the chances, and it's a different game. So, but, you know, it was definitely a harsh scoreline. It wasn't a 4-2 scoreline anyway.
Mm. Well, Arsenal's 2-1 extra time victory lifted a huge weight off Arsene Wenger's shoulders, and that did none on Guardiola's, or so it would seem. Now, Mark, we've had a good laugh at Arsenal's expense and often question Wenger's ability or inability to move with the times. They resorted to 3-4-3 for a second consecutive game, and surprise, surprise, it paid off again. Now, is this a coincidence more than anything, mate? Or do you think Arsenal's players actually put in a performance that deserved the win?
You know, going under to the game, I think they did deserve the win in the end. But I just think that we talk about it every week about how inconsistent this team can be, you know, and it's you never know what performance they're going to bring out week in, week out, which is always a difficult one. We actually have an English bar around 10 minutes from where I live, and it's actually the Arsenal Supporters Club that are there. So we were laughing and joking about it on Sunday about, you know, that win and maybe one more in the final could give Wenger a job again for next year after, you know, the whole season of Wenger out. You've seen posters and banners in every soccer stadium in the world. And, you know, these little results that he keeps getting and maybe going to an FA Cup final and getting back into the Champions League again, or at least the Europa League, is really going to give them a so-called successful season again and keep him there.
How disappointed do you think a lot of these Arsenal fans will be if he stays on? Even if they win the FA Cup and he stays on?
I think a lot of them want success or something to change at Arsenal. I think if he stays, they're going to want the board to back him this season. I think they're just crying out for big names, big signings, something to lift them, you know? And that, you know, going back with the Wenger years, it hasn't happened or it's not materialised. And I think that's what Arsenal want. I don't think it's the fact that Wenger's there. I think it's the fact that, you know, the lack of ambition while Wenger's there, maybe coming from upstairs, that's reflecting towards Wenger. I think if he stays and maybe he got a bit of money, a bit of, you know, a few signings, you know, football can change. We know that, you know. You know, two games before that, Wenger's got to go. Now they beat City. All of a sudden, Arsenal are on a high. They go and beat Spurs on Sunday. All of a sudden, you know.
They hand the titles to Chelsea.
There you go,
Rodri. Weak, lacking mental toughness, soft bellied. I mean, these are just a few terms you've used in the past to describe Arsenal's players. Now, granted, they rode their luck a little bit, but it looked like a completely different team to the one you've depicted.
It was one game. Still, they've got to do this throughout the year. Not in just semi-final games. I think they did this last year as well. They did put in a good result. Things are turning round and it's just Groundhog Day then. They have to do it week in, week out. Yeah, they're going to have a dip in form, but, you know, it's every year. Come January, boom, Arsenal go. It's every year. So yeah, they played well and they've rolled the luck and it could have gone either way.
Mm.
But it's gone their way, and you know, he's done well by getting a result, Arsene Wenger. But it doesn't change my view on the team, not one bit. Semi-final at Wembley, if you can't get up for that, then you know it's the other games, the West Broms, the Crystal Palaces, the Stokes, that they lose points every year.
I could just imagine Arsene Wenger, if he's listening to this, what do I have to do
to prove myself to these guys?
Well, Rob Holding, he seems to be one of the next generation superstars that Wenger has unearthed. I don't know. I mean, he put in a performance that you'd expect from a £55 million defender, not a £2.5 million signing from Bolton. I mean, he looked very comfortable on Sunday, didn't he?
Did. Very impressive for a young guy to come in a big game. Don't think he's probably faced a bigger game at Arsenal, that I can think of. To play, you know, against Aguero, one of the best strikers as well. He looked composed on the ball. He could defend. And especially the pressure that Arsenal were in, the form and everything else, to perform like that, I thought was a credit to him. He had a really good game.
Ben, City were quite unlucky, to be fair, man. I mean, they had a good goal chalked off and hit the woodwork a couple of times. That being said, I mean, all that matters is the full-time score, mate, and the result means Guardiola will end the season trophyless, which is like the first time in how many years? 7 years or something like that? I mean, even if City get a top four spot, has Guardiola failed?
I think, I think Guardiola's a bit of a fraud. I think he's, every club he's gone to, Barcelona, Bayern Munich, he's been ready-made teams there for him. You know, Barcelona had Messi, you know, they had Xavi, Iniesta, Bayern Munich, Robin, Ribery, Lewandowski, Manuel Neuer. He's gone to Man City, it's a little bit of a tougher task. I don't think he's going to be a failure of a season, though. It's his first season in a completely different league. It's a completely different style of football. It's a lot faster than a league and the Bundesliga. It's not great, of course, but obviously he makes top four. I'm sure the Man City board will be happy. They'll give another £200 million this summer. He'll go out and vastly overspend like they have done in Stones, and we'll see what happens next season.
Fair point. Mark, just ask you something regarding Guardiola, because we haven't actually discussed this, funnily enough. What's the Americans' take on Guardiola as a coach and a tactician? Because obviously we know the game is evolving out there. There's a lot of foreign coaches, or should I say European coaches, heading to the United States. What's the general feeling around Guardiola?
I think, you know, I haven't honestly spoken to a lot of people about it, but I agree totally with Ben. I think, you know, you got to the stage where he's had them million-pound players in front of him, you know, players that are the best in the world with the Messis and people like that. And he's come into a hard job in the Premier League, a job where there's four or five big teams fighting for the league, and not just like it is in Spain and in Germany, where it's just the one and two teams. So, you know, he's been thrown in the hot seat, and he's found it hard this year. Now, give him some money again at the summer and let him go out and buy a few, then maybe we'll see a different story next year. But he's definitely, certainly underachieved this year for me.
Fair enough. Now, it was double woe for City on Sunday following United's 2-0 win at Burnley. City hosts United on Thursday with only a point separating. Now, Rodri, Burnley have a superb home record this season. I think, to be honest, had they not been for their home record, I think they'd be in the relegation zone, to be fair. But United made light work of them. No Ibrahimovic, no problem. United were absolutely ruthless on the counter, weren't they?
They were. And as I always say to people, pace kills. And, you know, with the players that they come in, albeit Rooney, everyone's, and Martial's pace, it was funny just to see Joey Barton on a treadmill trying to catch him up. Yeah. It was funny. But yeah, it was the same as Chelsea. Pace kills. Lingard and Rashford giving the run around, and Martial and Rooney and Lingard did the same on Sunday. It was a professional performance, and it wasn't a typical Burnley freezing cold. The sun was out, it was shining, and it was a good day.
Absolutely. And Mark, with Ibrahimovic out for the rest of the season, mate, Mourinho called on the forgotten man, aka Wayne Rooney, and he didn't let the boss down. He got on the score sheet and he actually looked fresh, which is exactly what United need given the fixtures on the horizon.
Yeah, I agree. You know, I think Wayne Rooney still has quality about him. I know he may have been never forgiven with Man United fans from a few years ago, but he's still great to have around, both in and out of the changing rooms, I think. And to give him that rest and bring him back, and hopefully now being at his best going into the derby on Thursday, and then the season with the Europa League, which for me, United's going to be favourites now to go and win that. I think you could see a different Rooney for the last couple of games, and then see what happens next year. I still think he'll leave United this year and go somewhere else, maybe for the last season or two of his career, maybe back to Everton. But for me, he's going to give you a little bit more quality now for the end of the season. And then who knows, you might be without Rooney and Zoltan next year. So who will he bring in next?
Fair point.
I think people got to take a perspective the fact that they'll play Burnley. Yeah, I know people say, but you know, really had a good game in that. But it was Burnley, a fight against relegation. It's not as if you played Liverpool, Arsenal, Spurs, you had a blinder. You're playing Burnley. I know you've got a good players in Heaton and Michael Keane, etc. You know, Rooney is, you know, he's been playing first team football since he was 16 years old. He's probably got the body of a 35, 36 year old. No offence to any guys out there like that. But I think the rumours were the torch going around. I had a great game, but it was Burnley. Like I said, it wasn't Arsenal, it wasn't Man City, it was Burnley. So it's good to see him play well, but I think we've got to take a little perspective as to who they were playing.
Yeah, but to be fair, Burnley have got the third best home record in the league, Ben.
But where are they in the league, though?
Yeah, but it's the home form that's
kicking them. The league table doesn't lie, as they always say, you know, five games in maybe, but the league table doesn't lie. You have the best home form in the season, but when you're fighting relegation, mate.
No, I completely agree with you. I'm not trying to downplay anything, do you know what I mean? But at the same time, you know, Arsenal struggled to get a win there. Liverpool lost there. Did City win there?
City won there. Chelsea didn't win.
Chelsea drew there. So it's not an easy place to go. I mean, I think that a lot has been made of Rooney's performance. But as Rodri said, it's the pace that destroyed him. And I just think that's one of the things that Mourinho is going to be looking to improve on in the summer, but going forward for United.
Usually when you go to Burnley, in cold, I've been a couple of times to Burnley away and we've been beat. So it's a tough place to go, but the sun was out and it was a nice hot day and it was a nice day and they took advantage of it. You know, Burnley are no mugs at home. They might have not won a game away from home, but like the record states, they've got the third best home record in the league. So they're no mugs at home, but like you say, you shouldn't go over the top because it is Burnley. And we should be beating them away from home.
Absolutely. Well, United's weekend got even better as Liverpool stumbled at home to inform Crystal Palace. Now, you have heaped a lot of praise on Sam Allardyce. I just merely say he's got a magic wand. But should we really be surprised with the result? I mean, Liverpool's squad is paper thin. And that's even with everyone fit. Now, they've scraped a couple of away wins recently, but Palace are a completely different animal now, aren't they?
They are indeed. It took, you know, Big Sam quite, you know, a few months to get maybe his ideas across and exactly what it wanted. But they're one of the form teams in the Premiership, Palace. What was it? They've won 6-8 or something like that. So it comes as a surprise, yes, because they've beaten Liverpool at Anfield, but if you want to talk form-wise and how they've been playing, then no. I mean, Zaha, Benteke, they've been brilliant, you know, lately. Kabaye, they're starting to perform. And these are good players. And once the good players start performing, and defensively as well, they're not conceding a lot of goals, which is probably, Sam Allardyce, one of his biggest strengths at clubs, where defensively he's sound. So, as for Liverpool, disappointed to go 1-0 up at home as well and then to lose again. The problem with Liverpool is what you said, their squad is not good enough.
Yeah.
I think they had like 5 or 6 kids on the bench, or, you know, you need, especially at this stage of the season, you need the big players there, you know, even for someone to come off the bench 50 minutes to go, get you an equaliser, get you a winner, and it seems that they haven't got that at the moment.
I think it was the lack of transfer activity in January that's ultimately killed them.
Mm.
I mean, we knew that there are 3 or 4 injuries away from just capitulation. And I know Liverpool fans now, even with 4 games to go, they're saying, you know, we're worried about
top four.
Now, Ben, I mean, I know you're a big fan of Jurgen Klopp's. The target was top four, which they're in at the moment. So with Watford away, Southampton at home, West Ham away and Borough at home, I mean, there's a mess up, isn't it?
I think the top four says, I don't think they're going to throw it away at all. I mean, I'm a big fan of Jurgen Klopp. I think the fact that he's gone there and he's beaten the likes of Arsenal, Everton, Chelsea, Spurs, he's done a cracking job there. It's just been against the lower league teams, the teams below him in the league where they haven't really been able to carry that form over. And as you said, they've got a paper thin squad. And I think come the summer, when he goes out, he can only get a little bit of money, especially the Champions League money, because he's a big name to Liverpool, and I think they'll do well next season. I don't think they'll be challenging next season. It's a bit, a little bit too soon for that, but I think next season they'll do really well.
Fair point. Now, we put up a poll on Twitter yesterday asking who people think will take the remaining two Champions League places, and here were the results. They reckon 33% of people reckon it'll be Liverpool and City. 6% reckon it'll be Liverpool and Man United. 16% reckon it'll be Arsenal plus one. That's their, you know, plus one. And 45% reckon it'll be City and United.
It's quite hard.
Interesting. I don't know who voted. I sure as hell didn't. I'd have voted Liverpool and City, to be fair. But anyway. Right, so in other news, Newcastle's 4-1 victory over Preston guaranteed promotion to the Premier League, meaning the Geordies will be flying the flag for the North East because, let's face it, Sunderland Borough down. Rodri, in the mode, pundit Sheeran Mick Quinn say Mike Ashley should back Rafa Benitez by giving him a war chest so he can bring in players to keep Newcastle in the Premier League. I don't know what, like Hosemi and, I don't know, what's that Ukrainian striker he brought in from?
Voronin.
Voronin, yeah, bring him in. Question is, will Mr. Sports Direct sanction signings who ask for more than just national living wage?
It's a difficult one because, you know, you can spend big money, but it doesn't really necessarily make it. It's all about the recruitment. If you get the recruitment right and bring in the right players, it's not necessarily about how much the players is. It's who they recruit. And, you know, Rafa Benitez is a good coach, so I'm sure, like Burnley and like the other teams that have come up last year, that they'll be another team that'll do well next year. Because Rafa Benitez, you know, he's no mug. He's a top coach. So I'd expect Newcastle to recruit well because they've not been the best recruiters and the best of payers. But I expect them to stay up next year, definitely.
Fair enough. Well, this leads us on to our bite-back question, which is, will Rafa Benitez be Newcastle manager when the new season starts? Now, we've had a good response from our Facebook page, and let's start off with Rick. He's a good one because he's a Liverpool fan. He loves Rafa Benitez. Rafa will only be there if he's guaranteed money. Whispers are that he's leaving, though. I don't know whether they're Chinese whispers, though, to be fair. He's saying Liverpool have no chance of top four, but that's got nothing to do with the question, Rick. It's all about... It's not even about the question. What is this?
I don't know what
this
is. I think
I didn't even read these. Just take a look at what happened to Bolton. This is Sam Allardyce. Were you guys? Okay, Mike. Rafa will stay if he gets assurances about transfer budget, unlikely with the Cockney Mafia, which is a fair point. Rafa will go there if there's no money. And Everton, I know, but I'm not sure he cares, comes knocking. Possible suitors. Everton, if Koeman goes to Barcelona. Spurs, if Pochettino goes to Real Madrid. Liverpool would walk there, presumably not alone. Okay. City, no, he wouldn't go to City, Mike. Atletico, that's a good shout. So, yeah, as he says, permutations, options, and BS. Silly season is upon us. Now, Pascal Jimbondo, he always is the voice of reason, says, Rafa showed loyalty by sticking by them in the Championship when he could have walked away from the club at the end of the last season. If they don't reciprocate with adequate signings, then I think he'll walk. And I can't really blame him. What do you reckon?
I agree with that.
Yeah?
Yeah. I think he'll stay only if he gets the backing. And we know with Newcastle over the years, this question was debatable. I think he'll start the season there. I think if things are starting to go pear-shaped, he'll walk.
Mark?
I think he'll be in there, Stal. I think, you know, this season he's proved that he can get them back up. And I think now he's going to want to show the country and the world, really, that he can keep this team now in the Premier League. Some good recruitments, like Rodri said, and then push for, like, a middle table position. And then maybe from there, give him a year, he might walk out of the job then.
Benny boy?
I think he'll be there till something big comes along. You know, he's got Newcastle back into the Premiership, which is great. But I think a manager of his calibre, I think it'll be there until a bigger team like Atletico Madrid, for example, come to the point where we all know Mike Cash, he's not going to give the 30, 40, 50 million pound plus that he's going to need to rebuild that squad. You can't build a title winning team on Carl Darlow and Dwight Gale, not title winning, even a mid-table team on Dwight Gale and Carl Darlow. So he's going to get there, spend a lot of money, and given Mike Cashley's history, he's not going to do it, in my opinion. So we'll see what happens.
Roger,
I think he'll go. Yeah. I think he'll go.
Pardon?
You reckon he's going to be there in the summer?
Yeah, I think you'll see. You've got to see it out. You've got to the Premiership. You've got to at least have a go and see how it works out and see if you never know what goes on behind closed doors. You might have promised him a certain war chest. He might have said, this is what you've got to work with. You just never know. But if he walks, obviously because he's not being given the funds, that's for sure.
Mm. Moving on to El Clasico, and Leo Messi's last gasp winner at the Bernabeu sent social media into meltdown and blew La Liga race wide open. Now, the other talking point in Barca's 3-2 win was the sending off for Sergio Ramos, a potential leg-breaking challenge on Messi. Now, even with 11 men, Real Madrid looked completely out of ideas. I mean, I don't know if they were tired from the midweek game against Bayern Munich, but they just looked off colour. I mean, it was a fantastic game for the neutral, though.
I didn't want it to end. Brilliant game. Whenever these two play, always something happens. It's entertaining. Everybody watches it. The best players come to play. They entertain. I was a brilliant, brilliant game of football. As you can tell, I enjoyed it. Real Madrid, after the extra time with Bayern Munich, you know, Bell went off injured as well. They look tired. They look out of ideas, especially with about 15, 20 minutes to go. Kind of ran out of steam a little bit, and that's when Barcelona started to take more control of the game. But what an end to the game by Messi. It's kept the title race wide open, and especially now with Real Madrid in the Champions League, and Ramos is suspended, and a few injuries here and there. It's not over now, you know. A couple of weeks back, we kind of thought it was all over, but now, especially after the result the other day, momentum can swing, and anything can happen, and it's wide open, which was, I think, it's 4 or 5 games left in La Liga. Right. So, exciting.
Absolutely, absolutely. And Mark, Barca's win put them level with Real Madrid to have a game in hand. Still Real Madrid to lose, though, isn't it?
I think so, yeah. It's in their own hands still. You know, you don't see them losing many games apart from when they do play Barca. So, you know, for me, I think they'll win the game in hand, get that 3-point gap again. And I just can't see them being beaten this year again. They've got nothing else really. And they got the big semi-final coming up with Atletico, which will obviously turn them a little bit with their heads. But I still think they've got enough quality to go out and win that league.
They've got a couple of banana skins. They've got Sevilla still to play after one of the semi-finals. And they've got Malaga away. Malaga on their day can beat anybody.
And they've got Tony Adams, Granada as well.
Well, I didn't mention that. They lost again tonight, didn't they?
Yeah, I think the less said about that, the better, I mean.
Moving on.
Hartlepool United, here we go. There's one extreme to another. Hartlepool United now. Jeff Stelling's uncharacteristic public attack on Hartlepool United boss David Jones live on Soccer Saturday appears to have played a huge part in the former Southampton and Wolves manager's resignation. Gents, have you seen the footage?
Yeah.
I have, yeah.
You have? I mean, I'm thinking about just playing.
Yeah.
With the viewers, actually, don't worry, I'm not. I'm just going to put a YouTube link up later. But he basically said that he wants Dave Jones to hand in his resignation, and you know, was it 13 defeats or something like that? I don't know.
He's not good enough.
He just went off on a tangent, basically. Well,
he also offered to hack it. He also offered to retire, resign from his president role at the club if the board did sack him. He had a right tirade about it.
Yeah,
I thought he was nervous.
It was comical, but
is he allowed to do that? I mean, especially on national telly to kind of want somebody to get sacked, the loser's job.
Well, I guess it's
I know it's a football scene, but
I guess it's ratings and I don't know.
That was passionate.
It was, yeah, it was. But yeah. Jones told the reporters after the 2-0 loss against Bayern, he goes, "It's okay, Jeff Stelling's saying it in his comfy chair. He doesn't know. In fact, it's a lack of respect for me. He's such a big hero, but I'll go against him." Does he say about anyone else? Wenger, it's not his job. His job is to report. He hasn't phoned me. A few weeks ago, he sat in my office crowing about us going 5 games without losing. How we've changed and turned things around. Gents, I mean, what do you make of this? I know Stelling is, or was, the club's president, as Ben said, but this is over the line, wasn't it?
I agree with Jones's comment. I think, you know, we're all supporters of our teams, but when you're in a professional organisation like that, you know, it's difficult to be live on air. And I know we didn't know who was live at the time, but some of the comments he made was very unprofessional in what he where he is and what he's doing.
Mm. I think if it wasn't for his role at the club, it would just be seen as a rant, but the fact that he's the president of the club, do you know what I mean? To go out there, he's obviously got a lot of influence with the board, a lot of influence with the fans as well. So if he goes out there and says that stuff, all sort of stuff, all he's going to do is turn the players, the fans, and possibly the owners against him as well. So I do think it was very unprofessional. I do think it was funny from a neutral side of things, but you know, if you're a Huddersfield Town fan or player or whatever, it's going to be not the sort of thing you need right now.
Rod?
I just thought it was a disgrace. I watched it today. It was a disgrace. I think I like Jeff Stern as well, but I just think it's a disgrace. It's an absolute joke for him to say that. How passionate he was, how vindictive, how he was saying it. It was just all wrong for me. It was a disgrace, I think.
I think he used the platform he's got there to push him out the door. That's my opinion. Why else would you do it otherwise? You know, otherwise, he'd have a little quiet word, but he used his platform there to push him out, in my opinion, anyway.
It looked as if it was premeditated.
Yeah, agreed.
As Ben said, you know, he knew what he wanted to say. And, you know, like I said, it seemed very scripted as well. When you're angry about something, okay, not many of us are logical when we're angry about things, but it's very difficult to be very coherent when you're very passionate about something.
Yeah.
And he had it down to a T, which is why I'm thinking, well, perhaps he had this mapped out in his head that if they did lose, This is what he's going to say, and it was the perfect time to do it. Listen, he's a very eloquent guy. He's an intelligent guy. Mm. So I wouldn't put it past him to do that.
It's like Dave Jones said.
What he did there, that leads... What he did there, though, that Dave Jones, in no choice, he has to resign or he would get the sack. It was a joke. He's basically made him make a decision for him.
Agreed.
And it was a disgrace.
Totally agree.
It's just one big frustrated Hartlepool fan, just Sterling, to be honest. I mean, you can see when they score goals, isn't it? You know, he's all celebrating and cheering. I just think maybe he had enough, and it was his way of expressing. Yes, it's unprofessional, especially on the telly in front of kind of millions of viewers, but maybe it was just...
Hartlepool only got 2,000 fans, so...
Yeah, 2,000 fans, yeah.
If he truly felt that way, he could have gone down other avenues to get that sorted out. He could have had a word with Dave Jones. But like you said, it was only 5 games ago, whatever it was. He was in his office, bigging him up, saying, well done. But to go on air and publicly call him out the way he did, like I said, and like Rodri said, everyone else said, he screwed him over. You know, Dave Jones, he's not...
Sorry, Ben, he obviously knew him personally because he's been...
Thing is, you don't know what's happened as well. If Jeff Sterling's got contact with the players and he's lost the dressing room and it's maybe, you know, come out, please shame him out.
Yeah.
You don't know, no, you know.
Of course not.
You know, maybe he's had a few kind of calls with the players and the players are like, listen, we're not happy with him. We're not happy with the training. Look at the results. Look at the regime. It's not working. You're passionate. You're a big fan. Come out. Dig him out. You don't know.
No, I agree. Mark, has anything like this ever happened in the States? Or have you ever encountered anything like this before?
No, I think, you know, like I say, I think it's a disgrace as well. I agree with the guys, you know. I'm in a situation where I spent nearly 10 years at my boyhood club, you know. I was a season ticket holder there and was a supporter and then went in onto a coaching background in their academy. And it's like me coming out and slating the first team manager, you know, to people on air or things like that and wishing he would get the sack. And like you say, you are a supporter of the club and you're passionate and you go and watch them and everybody is. But when you're in the professional nature that we are in, you know, we have to back who's in charge and that's just the way it is.
And the position he's in as well, he's an influential person. He knows what he's saying. He's, like I said before, he's going to leave him in an untenable position, which is wrong. It's not his decision to do that. He should have rang him personally and said, listen, and done it that way, not done it on live TV. It's just wrong.
I agree. I don't think the rant was excusable. He was passionate about his football club, so he wanted to show it in a way as in, you know, enough's enough. But to do it the way he did it, on the air in front of everybody, that's the wrong way to go about
it. Listen, put it this way. You've seen how the power of fan TV can have so much of an influence on a certain demographic. what you got to bear in mind is that Jeff Stedden, he's a very, okay, he's an older fella. He's been presenting that show for, what, 10, 15 years, however long it's been. He knows exactly what he's doing, right? It wouldn't surprise me if that in the past, he's tried to get Dave Jones a sack by talking to the chairman or whatever, and it's just fallen on deaf ears. And this is his way of getting his message across, because he's obviously used Sky as a platform to do this. Mm. That's the only explanation I can think of. I mean, as you said, you know, he knows Dave Jones. It's not as if, you know, they never had any contact. Mm. So why would he do this on TV unless he had an ulterior motive? And it worked. It worked, which is a shame, because that sets a precedent for everyone else.
Yeah.
You know?
You can't say he's an ulterior motive. He openly said, sack him. So what's he an ulterior motive? He was calling the club owners to get rid of the guy. Do you know what I mean? So, everyone said, it was shocking.
But to be fair, you didn't see Richard Keys do anything like that when Coventry had problems.
Yeah, true.
No, he kept dignity, didn't he, about him. Never said anything.
What? On camera.
Yeah, on camera, yeah.
Well, from one club in disarray to another, sorry to do this, Mark, but Birmingham City now, less than 24 hours after Gianfranco Zola stepped down as Birmingham boss, the club's owners made a deal with Wheeler dealer Harry Redknapp, who took the hot seat with the club 2 points off the relegation zone. Now, Mark, the term hot seat is an understatement at the moment, isn't it? I mean, the club is in total disarray, and to make matters worse, they lost their first match under Redknapp to deadly rivals Villa. Now, as a Blue Nose, you must be sweating buckets right now. Will this be another Harry Houdini act, or is it too little too late?
It's a really difficult time at the minute, Style. You know, it's honestly, I can sit here and say I think we're in a better position this week than we were 2 weeks ago. You know, if Rowett sacking, that it was a big thing for us Birmingham fans, and that it may start a roller coaster of managers coming in at the door. I never really thought that Zola would be successful in his role, even though that, like we say, we have to back the man in charge. But you know, he could have easily have walked away or been sacked 4 or 5 weeks ago, and they kept backing him, and it comes to three games left of the season, and they bring in a big name like Harry Redknapp. But you know, we looked at the Villa game and it's the same thing. We rule the game in massive periods and just can't find the back of the net. And, you know, it comes down to Gabby coming on like he has done in seasons and seasons against us and banging in the winner. And I don't think we deserve to lose. I really don't. But it, as a Birmingham fan looking into it, it hasn't changed. You know, we got another defeat. We got 2 games left. 2 points in front with the worst goal difference in the league. So, you know, it's one win for Blackburn and one defeat for us, really, that can really change it around. Now, Villa go to Blackburn on Saturday. You know, we're hoping Villa do us a favour, which I'm sure, you know, speaking to friends that work highly at Aston Villa, I'm sure they're going to go out there and give it a performance. They're not going to, you know, lay back just because it's going to relegate Birmingham. They're going to go out and be professional about it. And now, if they get a win and we can sneak a win in a full house against Huddersfield at home, who have just qualified for the playoffs and may rest a few players, then as of Saturday, we're safe, 5 points ahead and going into the last game. So anything can happen. I wouldn't say it's Harry that's going to keep them up. I think it's just, you know, his buzz has come in the place and turned everything around. But, you know, we've underachieved massively this season, and a big one was the sacking of Gary Rowett. And we just got to hope we can get that last win, stay up and see what he can do next year.
Mark, why do you think it took so long? I mean, I know Gianfranco Zola walked, or apparently he walked. Yeah. Why did all of this take so long? Why didn't they sack him?
I think if you look at it, the Chinese owners come in and they made the decision to sack Rowett and bring Zola in. So Zola was their man. And, you know, they had so much crap from the fans and everybody connected to the footballing world about this decision. Now, who are you going to say that you're going to put your hands up and say you're wrong? Because you're trying not to. You're trying to make it aware that you are made the right decision and build the team. So I think for them, they just needed to back the man they brought in. And he got to the stage where, in the end, Zola seen it and the fans were turning against him and everybody else, and he had to walk himself. If he hadn't walked, I still think that the owners would have kept him until the end of the year.
So you're fairly confident that you'll stay up?
I think, you know, if last week when I spoke to you, Estelle, I said on the text message, I said we'll go down. This week, I'm on the edge because I just think that, you know, Blackburn are struggling as well. And, they, you know, if we can get 3 points out of one of our games, it could make us stay up. So that's going to be the difference, is the team below us, you know, are struggling as well. Apart from that, you know, it can all change again Saturday. Like I say, one win for them against Villa, and we could be in the bottom three going to Bristol City away. So it's a really difficult call. So hopefully in 2 weeks, I'll be back on the show smiling.
I find it incredible. I mean, the last time Mark was on the show, we were talking about Gianfranco Zola taking the job, and
it was seventh,
yeah. 3 points away from the playoffs.
Yeah.
And now they're 3 points or 2 points off the relegation zone.
Crazy.
Unreal. Well, on to another unreal subject then. That's Raymond Domenech and Nicolas Anelka. I mean, this is brilliant. When I read it, I thought, you know what, I've got to put this on the show now. Kylian Mbappe, you know he's one of the world's most hottest properties at the moment. But I doubt anyone knew his excellent form would reignite a 7-year rivalry between former France national team boss Raymond Domenech and Nicolas Anelka. Now, for those of you who don't know, Domenech and Anelka had a very heated exchange at half-time when France played Mexico at the 2010 World Cup. Anelka was sent home by the French Football Federation, and his relationship with Domenech appears to be irreparable. Now, Domenech is a columnist for French newspaper L'Equipe. He wrote this about Mbappe. I remember Ronaldo at the Olympics in 1996, and Mbappe is of his level, a world-class player. It is up to him to manage this well. He has the choice between being a Ronaldo or an Anelka. Right, now, not being one to mince his words, Anelka hit back telling Le Journal de Dimanche, I can't even speak French. With a cold as well, wicked. Anelka said, yes, Mbappe could be like me, one of the best in the world, or like Ronaldo, a legend. Or maybe he could have had a career like Domenech, an average league-owned player, an under-21 coach for 15 years without winning anything, unemployed since 2010, and now writing a column for the newspaper that ended his little coaching career. I like the little coaching career bit at the end. Gents, I don't think this will be the last time they'll exchange a few words. It's a bit catty, though, isn't it?
It looks like they've missed each other, isn't it?
Yeah.
Catching up.
Like holding the head.
And Elko is one of the best strikers in the world, so I thought it was quite a weird comment to make. It wasn't like he was, I don't know, freaking Steve Marley, do you know what I mean, from Fulham. He was one of the best strikers in the world at Arsenal, at Real Madrid and so on. So it was just a very catty, being a bit like an ex-girlfriend, slagging you off, you know, behind your back when you break up. So it was a bit catty, but it's quite funny to hear it, especially Steven Elka. And Nicolas Anelka's come back as well.
He's just questioning his temperament and his attitude. I think that's what he's trying to come across, as in, don't turn like an Anelka with an attitude like that.
But the thing is, I always thought, I mean, I'm probably wrong here, way off base, but I always thought that the problem wasn't Anelka, it was his brothers who were acting as his agents.
Yeah. That's always been the rumours, that it was his brothers rather than him caused all the troubles.
Exactly. Rod, what do you make of this whole thing?
It's funny, it's Colts a bit of a weirdo, to be honest, isn't he? Anelka's got a point, but Anelka was a top player. He's, you know, I know his brothers got him a few moves and that. But I'm sure Anelka just didn't go kicking and screaming. I'm sure he was happy to go. Some players who were top players that just want to earn as much money as possible, and that's what Anelka did. He earned a lot of money doing playing football and going to all these places. And this coach is a bit of a clown, isn't he?
Yeah. Well, Anelka played for probably one of the few biggest clubs in the world, didn't he? Played for Liverpool, played for Madrid.
Yeah.
Played for Arsenal.
Played for Paris Saint-Germain at one point, didn't he?
Paris Saint-Germain.
Paris Saint-Germain.
For Man City.
Yeah. Massive club there, mate. Massive club, yeah.
I didn't mention Man City.
They downgraded.
Yeah. But
Domenech was the manager that used to pick players on star signs or something, wasn't he?
Yeah. That's the one. Is he the one that also proposed to his wife after France got knocked out of the World Cup? Was it him? Was he the one that proposed to his girlfriend after they got knocked out of the World Cup and the European Championship? And like, wasn't it?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, excellent. Well, yeah, the saga continues. This would be a good one. It would be like a cliffhanger, isn't it? Right, our final two stories are head scratches. Now, Grimsby Town fans, they've been banned from taking inflatables to this weekend's game at Barnet after hundreds of fans took them to the same fixture in 2015. Do you know about this one?
No.
Okay, so the story stems from an incident between Forest Green and Grimsby, where a Grimsby fan was thrown out of the ground for failing to hand over an inflatable from Stewart. Now, in protest, Grimsby fans threw hundreds of beach balls on the pitch at Barnet the following week. One fan was found guilty of assaulting a steward with an inflatable shark.
Amen as well. We've all been hit in the face with one before. They hurt. It could have had someone's eye out. I think they've done the right thing there. It's a funny story. It's a funny story. And I like it.
Does this not just promote it? Does this not just promote it for like to if this was, if they said this to United fans, right, you can't have any inflatables, the band, there will be a million inflatables there.
Stuffed down their trousers and all sorts. Back
yeah, so
Darren Bent scored one of them, didn't he? Because Liverpool.
Yeah, beach ball.
Yeah.
Beach ball. I remember we played City back in, was it 2001, I want to say. We missed two penalties that day. We drew one all. Steve Howe scored the header. I remember City were going to go down that season because we lost the derby at home the next week or the week after. But that during that City game, United fans were throwing inflatable rubber rings at City fans for survival. Oh my God. Well, City fans used to bring like inflatable bananas and stuff like that. Bizarre. Yeah. Rodri as well. Okay, let's go to the Danish derby. This is a weird one as well. Now, when Luis Figo had a pig's head thrown at him by Barcelona fans, we thought this was a one-off incident. I mean, who in their right mind would go to the trouble of organising a covert operation to sneak a couple of animals to a football stadium? I mean, the corpses of an animal, let alone, you know, and launch it onto the pitch aiming for a certain player. Now, Brøndby fans took it to a new level in the Danish derby against FC Copenhagen. In the 85th minute, just as Copenhagen left-back Augustinsson was about to take a corner, a group of fans threw dead rats at him. Three, to be exact. Anyone care to comment?
How they smuggled that in, I don't know.
What do you say to think something like that?
What's that?
What do you say to something like that? It's just bizarre. First question is, how long have they had the rats in their pockets?
They could be from the canteen, for you know.
Definitely. Definitely. Where did they get them?
They thought it was a pie at half time.
I mean, that's pretty. I mean, who thinks of it? It's like, let's take in something to throw at their players. What are we going to get?
What should we get? How about some dead rats?
Dead rats. I mean, what? Did they have to kill the rats first? Did they find the rats? Dead already? I don't know. How would you? I don't know.
How would that conversation even arise between you and your mates? I know what we should do for a laugh. Let's take some dead rats to the game today. I mean, how would that even come along in a conversation? It must be a good
I think it would have shocked the steward doing the search before the game.
Did he get scared when he saw that?
He was kicking them off the pitch. And then the stewards came and started like, collecting them.
Yeah, he must have been that steward. Spurs steward must have got a job there.
Oh, yeah, Spurs steward.
Yeah, seriously.
Did they show him to the ref and go, look what they've just thrown at me?
You know, no, they're just there. He was in the corner and they threw two and it was right by the corner flag and then they threw a third one.
Might have hit you in the face or something.
Oh, man. Would you rather get hit by a pig's head or a dead rat?
A dead rat. He said, knock it out.
Example. He's not sticking on the barbecue, he was. So yeah, that's pretty much the end of our show, Jen. So I thought I'd end on a good note rather than a depressing thing. But thanks for agreeing to appear on the show again, Jen. It's been fantastic having you guys on. Mark, tell us a bit about what you're doing now at Liverpool, man, because we haven't spoken to you since the last time you were on.
Yeah, so I've taken over the four youth teams for the International Academy over here in Texas. So I'm doing a U15 and a U14 boys team. And then some of the younger ones that are just coming through the pre-academy, the U7 boys and then a U8 girls team. So, you know, we're pushing them, we're working them hard. America's changing, really is. It's building some new elite leagues that we're trying to get in now to work with the elite players, you know. Our goal here now at Liverpool would be first to get everybody in the system playing, you know, college soccer or somewhere in the MLS. And then maybe we can find one that we can send home and be that first club who really sends a boy back who can go out and play in the Liverpool Academy or even the Liverpool first team. So it's an exciting time, and it's you know, it's a great opportunity. We have a lot of calls, Skype calls and things like that back home with the Liverpool staff. So it's nice to get their experiences and ideas as well that we can give back to our kids here. You know, we always know that soccer is different in England to it is here, and it always will be. So to be able to bring that here and show the kids is a great experience for everybody.
But there's a lot of input from Liverpool in the UK. Liverpool within the UK to America, isn't there? It's not as if they just let you guys get on with it. As you said, there's the conference calls. I think Stephen Gerrard was over recently, wasn't he?
Yeah, we have the conference calls, and we have staff come over every summer and run international camps and things for the kids. We also follow their curriculum, and then the staff are always all on the sports session planner, which is an internet-based session planner that we go on and put our sessions in. If we're looking for any sessions, we can find everybody's from anybody who coaches at Liverpool from England and all over the world. We can find their sessions, and we can use their ideas with our boys. So it's a big family-run thing that is trying to, you know, the Liverpool way they call it, is just trying to build that all over the world now. So it's very exciting and very interesting, really.
And one more thing, mate. You mentioned the curriculum. What do they do from like an academic standpoint?
You know, over here is a little bit different. Education over here is crazy. You know, we go on that education is the most important thing. These kids are in school until they're 18 years of age. You know, my stepson now is just graduating at 18, and I was thinking that when we're back in England, we've got a job by then, and we're finishing college, and we're doing whatever, and we're old enough to go out and be an adult. But these guys are still, you know, 18 years old and still in high school. So, you know, education is very much on the scale highly here, and you've got to have great GPAs and things like that to get into university. So, you know, we're trying to make sure that we can offer you college scholarships through soccer, but if you haven't got the education, you're going to get nowhere near a college here. So it's a difficult one, but we just try to keep it with them that they educate first.
Excellent. And is it true then, Mick, you're saying you'll never walk alone every morning when you go into the office?
Not every morning, but every meeting we go to, we usually finish it off with that as well. So you may have seen my picture on Facebook last week with the scarf around my neck. I know you must have hated that picture, but it was with Jimmy Mealy. Jimmy Mealy is over here coaching. So, you know, we sing You Never Walk Alone at the end of them, things that we do with the boys. But apart from that, you know, we stick to it, and it's a great club to work for. Over here, definitely, you know, we're getting experiences that we wouldn't get at any other club just because of the feedback we're getting from England. So it's really enjoyable.
Excellent. Brilliant. Cheers, mate. And Benny boy, you've been a busy lad for the past few months, haven't you? What are you doing with yourself?
Just been a busy man. I currently run a FIFA e-gaming league. So that's going really well at the moment. You've got Wolverhampton Wanderers involved, the new States of Wales, Hamilton, Hibs, Crusaders, Dundalk, and that's going really well. Just about to finish our first season, and we're looking forward to next season. So it's going really, really well.
And how many people get involved in this thing, man?
We've got eight players. We've got eight players involved at the moment. We've got obviously guys representing each club and that, and we've got two games left in the season. So we're looking forward to that. We've basically finished not next week, but the week after. So I'm looking forward to it. It's going to be nice into the season. We've pretty much got a guy who's just run away with the league all season. And looking forward to it. It's been a really good season. Really good season.
Do you know what? I never realised how big online gaming is until you watch YouTube, right? I saw a Football Manager video. I was just flicking through today. It had 2.5 million views. Some kid playing Football Manager. That's someone like Ben playing Football Manager. And he's recorded himself. What is going on? 2.5 million views.
It's insane. There's a guy in there who I talked to who's got 100,000 subscribers just from playing Football Manager. It's insane.
Mad. But are you getting anywhere with it, though? Have you had a positive response and everything?
Yeah, with the Gabriel Leeds game really, really well. We're already talking, we're in talks for next season already. There's also talks about some Premiership teams being involved next season as well. I can't name names, but last season, at the beginning of the season, there was talks about a Premiership team getting involved, but unfortunately, yeah, sort of fell through at the last minute. But there's rumours on next season, we've got two teams coming next season as well, so it should be good.
Excellent, brilliant. Well, guys, thank you very much for coming on, mate. It's been great talking to you. And Rodri, what do you do with yourself? I haven't actually asked you. Like, how's the coaching getting on?
That's me.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's all right. Yeah, it's okay. Last game next week, and that's it. Game over. Feet up.
When you back in September or August?
No, it'd be like June.
June, okay. Okay.
Early June.
Brilliant. Well, guys, thanks ever so much for coming on the show. It's been great having you guys on. We should do this again sometime soon when you lot are free. It was a pretty spectacular event, if I may say so myself.
No, it was good.
It was good. See, we didn't bicker once.
It's because you're ill. I let you off tonight.
When I hit the podcast, you watch what's going to happen.
We might not see the next week.
Excellent, guys. Well, before I let you go, Joe, give your Twitter handle. Rod, start first, mate.
Twitter, Rod James Giggs.
Mark?
It's Meza0102.
Benny?
It's just Ben DPB.
You?
Yannickus J.
Excellent. Follow us at Shooting Defence. We have a Facebook group page. If you're listening on the podcast, just tweet us and tell us what you think about us, especially my croaky voice. We'll be back next week, I hope. Until then, take care.